Hey everyone, this is Carlos Morales with the Libertarian Atheist Podcast. Find everything at libertarian-atheist.com, and if inclined, you can donate at libertarian-atheist.com/donate. Today I have Andrew Cachone, once again from the Bastiat Institute in Fee, to discuss what is being described as a humanitarian crisis from hell. As we speak, there are tens of thousands of children in Venezuela who are going hungry, wasting away while living in cardboard boxes. No medical supplies, food, or plain water for many of them today. Hundreds of thousands of people have no electricity, running water, and are waiting in lines for days hoping to just get some scraps. Yet, this country has one of the largest reserves of oil in the world, and is yet more destitute than almost nearly any, especially westernized country, on Earth. The hyperinflation is catastrophic. In 2012, the US dollar was worth 4 Venezuelan bolivars. By the end of 2015, it was 400. By 2017, it was looking to be about 4,000. Now, despite having more oil reserves than Saudi Arabia, and in fact, more proven oil reserves than any country in the world, 8 times more than the US, oil-rich Venezuela, while their economy is imploding and collapsing under the crippling burden of socialism, and economic conditions there have deteriorated so dramatically that they probably now qualify as the economic apocalypse that some left-leaning economists were predicting just a few years ago would never happen. So the question is, how did this happen? And what is the truth about the Venezuelan crisis?
This is what buying food looks like in Venezuela. Waiting for hours, hoping that by the time one hands in their allotted number, there'll still be food left. And this is what it feels like.
This is the greatest sadness because I didn't know this Venezuela several years ago. For us, this is something new, something unbelievable, unacceptable. It has no other name but catastrophic.
Economists say a decade of price controls crippled the productive sector and gave rise to a black market. Shelves are now empty.
These hour-long queues have become emblematic of Venezuela's economic crisis. People in this line have said they've been queuing not only for hours, but for years now. They're getting simply desperate.
For the government, shortages are part of an economic war waged by capitalist forces. Its latest plan is to battle it with CLAPS, or a new food distribution system.
We are going toward a revolution of the food distribution systems, which is where we've been penetrated by the parasitic capitalists, by the smugglers, the speculators, the criminals.
In the 23 de Enero community, a bastion of government support in the capital Caracas, the new system has shortened the wait. Flour, milk, margarine, bean and rice, sold for 200 bolivares, or the black market equivalent of 20 cents. A pre-packaged deal of goods that are seldom found in regular stores. But one to be enjoyed every 21 days, if your family was part of a census, and according to some, if you're a friend to the government. On the opposite side of Caracas, another hour-long wait, this time for bread.
It's all propaganda. We haven't seen this food distribution system. No one has benefited, not my area, not my family, not my neighbors.
According to analysts, in Caracas alone, food scarcity now reaches 80%. Even if the new distribution system works, supplying it could prove a challenge.
How are you doing today, Andrew?
Good. Glad I'm not in Venezuela.
No
Massachusetts
shit,
might be horrible. California might be horrible, but come on, it can be worse.
Yeah, it's an interesting aspect, right? We did the show last week regarding free trade that some people had some notes about. You know, people are concerned that by me arguing that adding in more free trade will therefore add in a flood of more immigration without, you know, understanding the economics of why people flee their countries in many cases because of high amounts of regulation, right? Many Venezuelans, especially the ones who are able to, are fleeing the country in massive droves, right? For good reason. In fact, it's been calculated that buying wheat, chicken, and some eggs could cost you as much as 1 month's worth of labor in comparison to what we have here in America. Now, of course, inflation is bad. You know, the economy isn't great. But honestly, and I know this is in part due to food subsidization, I get that. But at the job I have right now, I could buy a lot of the food I would need for, say, about 3 days in about 1 hour, right? And that's just certainly not the situation that's going on out there. So, Andrew, why don't you tell us a little bit about the history here and kind of why is it such a clusterfuck in Venezuela right now?
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of different factors. The simplest solution, and one that I don't think is wrong to diagnose this, would be socialism. And yes, I think that is the overwhelming problem with Venezuela. However, I think you need to be a little more nuanced than just that. First of all, we need to do things like define socialism, because if Venezuela is more socialist and that's why they're in crisis, then what is the gauge for that? How are they more socialist? And in fact, you can look at things like the percentage of the private sector's share of the economic activity in Venezuela. So in the USSR, there was a very small to non-existent private sector. Ostensibly, there's a huge black market. In capitalist countries, there's a state sector that might be 20% of the economy, and there's an 80% capitalist sector. And if you look at Venezuela, it's kind of similar to that. You know, the share of the Venezuelan economy that's occupied by the state isn't really any larger than the share of the American economy occupied by the state, or the Norwegian economy occupied by the state. But I think the important reason why, though all these countries, you could call them socialist, why there's food on the shelf in Norway and the United States, and why there is no food on the shelf in Venezuela, mostly has to do with price controls and price fixing. How governments, they can kind of get away with a certain degree of socialism without causing starvation, so long as they allow economic liberalism and laissez-faire generally in prices, and they don't try to fix prices. But Venezuela seems to have the horrible policy of fixing prices and then also being heavily reliant on oil. And both of these in combination mean that when the oil price drops even a little, suddenly, you know, the entire economy is out of luck and everything shuts down and there's shortages for everything. And so, you know, that's the simple kind of diagnosis. It's interesting to read the different media spins on this. You know, the socialist writers will go out of their way to talk about, for instance, The Nation has a piece on August 17th or today. They put it out, Why is Venezuela in Crisis? And they kind of try to be the leftist ideologues that are still standing, where maybe, you know, they're not saying everything's fine with Venezuela. They're not that crazy. They admit there are problems. 2 years ago, they may have said everything's fine. But even now, even The Nation, which is way more left-wing than even The New York Times, they've got to admit there are some problems. But the whole gist of this piece is saying, oh, no, the right wing's wrong. It's not about socialism. Venezuela is capitalist. And, you know, it's just corruption and oil.
And it's interesting that the left are having problems understanding what their narrative's supposed to be in this situation, because it is such a abysmal state of affairs. I mean, I've heard some people on the left actually state, well, the problem was that Venezuelan went too socialist by nationalizing everything. And then I've heard other ones go, well, no, it's a corporatocracy socialist thing. And what we need is either nationalized socialism or democratic socialism, however they're choosing to define those particular terms today. It's a bit like, you know, fundamentalist Christians who we can bring up, you know, these countries that start adopting a lot of Christian values. And in certain cases, they end up quite terrible. They redefine what the term Christian means consistently. So that you're able to you redefine yourself out of the argument rather than have the integrity to admit when you're wrong about a particular topic. And, you know, just a couple of years ago, Salon had an article where they were stating that, you know, all the right-wing people were incorrect and that Venezuela is going to be the top-tier nation that America will actually look up to. And none of these comments have been redacted, right? You can still find the articles. Right.
Yep.
They don't even try, and it's I mean, it shows obviously a complete lack of integrity, to the point that I'm almost sad that they're not even trying to delete their tracks. It's so transparent. It's kind of like Hillary Clinton, you know, hiring that DNC chairwoman right after it's found out that, you know, she was working for Hillary Clinton and getting her into the election, and then immediately hires her afterwards. It's like, fuck it. Does anyone really care? Right?
And yeah.
It doesn't matter how much blood is on the hands of those who beg for the state to take over their lives. They still propel forward, undeterred, for the simple idea that greed is bad, and that collective ownership, supposed ownership of all goods with a large father paternalistic or possibly maternalistic state is the only way that we can be freed from the ravages of human nature.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad. And I don't think even if it gets worse, and let's remember that for a country that's experiencing economic collapse, it gets worse than what we're seeing in Venezuela. 70 million people died during the Great Leap Forward in China. Venezuela, I think right now is teetering. It still is definitely a market society on the surface, but it's kind of teetering on the border of complete state control. The state, there's a cycle of interventionism that the great economist Ludwig von Mises talks about, where first the government regulates an industry and then prices rise. So this is terrible. So the government fixes prices, but then shortages develop. This is what happens whenever you fix price, supply and demand don't match. So the government imposes quotas to alleviate the shortages, telling the supermarkets they have to stock the shelves, telling consumers they can only buy so much chicken. But the problem is that these quotas inherently mean that industry is unprofitable, and industries typically either go bankrupt or they just leave the market. You have the Venezuelan government accusing the middle class in that country of hoarding and, you know, not selling their goods on the market. And this is probably true, but that's because of the price fixing that they would be losing money if they sold on the market. It makes no sense for them to sell on the market at the government approved prices. So they're going to hoard it for themselves or sell it on the black market for the actual market price. So these, the government's propaganda, you know, is interesting. It's pretty much the same as the leftists' propaganda in the West when they try to justify Venezuela, that there's just an economic war being waged by the bourgeois and the capitalists. They're hoarding all these goods, and they want to kill the government, and it's a coup. And so the one thing that makes it so anyone believes this hogwash is the fact that the U.S. government has overthrown dozens of countries and military coups over the last 40 years. So the U.S. doesn't help the people of Venezuela in that it makes the government's argument completely plausible. And that's one of the main things that keeps the government of Venezuela in power is this anti-American, anti-Western sentiment that they don't, the people there are proud that there hasn't been a military coup imposing capitalism, whatever that means. And they think that all these problems are due to a Western economic war. And the reason they believe this is because there have been several Western military coups over the last few decades, and it's completely plausible to them. And so the West's military coups, I think, have been the best friend of socialism in Latin America. It's been the ideological basis for all of the socialist movements. It's why they exist. It's why they gain adherence, because they fundamentally present themselves as we're the solution to American colonialism and the military coups. Vote Chavez, and it works. And you could blame the people, but you can also kind of blame the U.S. Policy planners here for just even making it plausible that the U.S. would be overthrowing governments, because they did.
And of course, this is actually dramatically similar to the topic that me and you discussed for a number of months, right? Radical Islam, where you had massive American intervention into the Middle East and British intervention, white people intervention into the Middle East for a number of centuries. And you ended up with a lot of radical beliefs fermenting. Now, of course, the British actually wanted that to occur. They funded specific groups, and interestingly enough, they also directly funded radical Muslims to fight communists, right?
Yeah.
Now, in that particular situation, you ended up with great people like Osama bin Laden taking over large groups and areas and destroying many individuals' lives. And the same kind of illogical notions are also raised up from the situation whereby people start to believe that the only problem with Islam is Western imperialism, and that's why suicide bombings and things like that are occurring, is because of the West.
Yeah.
Rather than acknowledging, okay, maybe the religion has a little bit to do with it in this situation, and then just kind of discarding that idea. And then when we talk about South America and communism, it's a similar thing. Communism is not the problem. It's great in theory, which to me is an absolutely abysmal idea. The flat earth idea is not great in theory. It just doesn't play out in reality. It's a terrible theory in general, right?
Nope.
Because it doesn't account for reality. And communism does not account for the reality of how human beings interact. And is that because we're too greedy? I think that's an improper way of interpreting it. I'm not a big fan of Ayn Rand's interpretation of what greed is and trying to redefine it as a virtue, because I think that's stretching. It's a little bit too edgelord for me, to be quite honest. But it's because whenever you centrally plan an economy, that is the most horrific idea possible, because you're using violence to perpetuate your ideals to be pushed forward in the future while ignoring the abundance and beauty and creativity of human beings across the world to make the world a better place. And yep. So there is a destruction of incentives that occurs, obviously, in these situations, and a destruction of lives. You know, and I actually want to talk about a point here, because if you want to talk about people going against their own lineage, continuing to have children, that's actually a huge problem that's happening in Venezuela right now. And it's catastrophic to the point where Venezuela is having what are called sterilization days. And I'm going to go into this. So traditional contraceptives like condoms or birth control pills have virtually vanished from store shelves, including, by the way, toilet paper and things like tampons in general. And this has pushed women towards a very hard to reverse surgery. So there was this was a piece with Reuters. Having a child now means making him suffer, said Milagros Martinez, waiting on a park bench on a recent morning ahead of her sterilization at a nearby Caracas Municipal Health Center. The 28-year-old butcher from the poor outskirts of Caracas decided on the operation after having an unplanned second child because she could not find birth control pills. Her day life revolves around finding food. She gets up in the middle of the night to stand in long lines outside supermarkets, sometimes with no choice but to bring along her baby son, who has been sunburnt during hour-long waits. I'm a little scared about being sterilized, but I prefer that to having more children, said Martinez, who with dozens of other women took a bus from the slums at 4 a.m. to attend a special sterilization day in this healthy area of Caracas. While no recent national statistics on sterilizations are available, doctors and health workers say demand for the procedure is growing. The local health program for women in Miranda State, which includes parts of Caracas, offers 40 spots during these sterilization days, but as recently as last year, it did not usually fill them. Now all the slots are scooped up, and some 500 women are on the waiting list, according to the program director, Deliana Torres. This is socialism, folks. If you think that the greed of capitalism, which, by the way, has created what we know as the middle class, poverty is the natural state of humanity. It is not capitalism that brings about poverty. It's something that it inherits, and it's trying to propel people out of that. And it has so many times in so many countries.
Including Venezuela. Yeah. Venezuela, 30 years ago, was one of the wealthier countries in Latin America. Maybe not as wealthy as the U.S., but it was a normal functioning capitalist country. And these things can change in a generation. You know, Venezuela went downhill very quickly in a generation. Things can go the other way very rapidly, too. South Korea in 1980, by a lot of measures, was about on equal footing with North Korea. They were both bombed out shells of a country run by dictatorships. And then South Korea started adapting some pro-market policies over the next 20, 30 years, and now it's richer than the United States. Wealth is not just a fixed thing where you have poor countries and rich countries and they stay that way forever. It's not something that's stolen. It doesn't have to do much with oil and natural resources in your country. I think that's something we can maybe get into more a little later. It has to really do with just how much of a market-based society your country is at the end of the day. Do you have price fixing? Do you have a market for private property? Do you tolerate things like stock markets and buying and selling and trading loans? If you do, you can get away with some levels of government interventionism, but without the price fixing, you're not going to have people starving. And if you don't, if you have socialism or heavily controlled price fixing of a market economy, you either never develop the wealth in the first place, like in some parts of Africa. They're as poor as Venezuela, but they've never known anything but that. So you don't call it apocalypse or catastrophe just because they've always been that way. In Venezuela, it is apocalypse and catastrophe because it didn't used to be this way. It used to be a westernized country with things on the supermarket shelves, with working industries. And then over the last 20 years, it's been destroyed, the whole society. There's a beautiful market economy that existed in Venezuela, like every beautiful decentralized market economy built from the bottom up by thousands of people taking individual decisions, was kind of just eroded and stripped bare and replaced with people just perpetually waiting in lines with no jobs and a few oil sector workers that aren't actually even making any oil anymore.
Yeah, and it's a pretty catastrophic situation with that. And if you think about, as I mentioned earlier, when we were taking a look at just how much oil they have, again, more proven oil reserves than almost any other country on earth, possibly any other, they are right now importing in oil to run machines in order to refine more oil because the cost situation is so terrible right now. It's much like the U.S. Army, I don't know, importing sand into Iraq for volleyball games. But at least America has the money to do that. Or at least we act like they have the money. They have the credit to do it, if anything. And even in things like sugar. Just a decade ago, Venezuela was producing nearly all of the sugar it needed. But this week, 30,000 tons of imported Guatemalan sugar were offloaded in one of the port cities in Venezuela for delivery to government-run supermarkets across the country, where desperate shoppers are typically, again, having to line up for hours just to buy basic food. I mean, this is catastrophic, and the levels by which it's going is pretty insane. Now, we talked last week a little bit about how when you have a country that ends up with a lot of resources, you can end up in a pretty bad situation, as it turns out. Hong Kong is one of the best economies on earth right now, and they don't really actually seem to have many resources outside of, say, human beings and fish. But outside of that, they're able to garner quite a bit of resources just through efficiency, trade, and intelligence, and a lack of massive regulations preventing new businesses from being able to build up. So could you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah. So economists generally refer to something called the resource curse, where one way of looking at the world is, oh, you want more resources. The more resources the country has, the more powerful you are. Economists have looked at this, and actually the exact opposite seems to be true. The more natural resources a country has, especially the higher percentage of the country economy that's dominated by the natural resource industry, the poorer a country is, almost across the board. A few exceptions, but not many. And the only exceptions seem to be one or two Middle Eastern despotisms and Norway. And I think it's kind of useful to look at these exceptions, how you have this general correlation in almost every country of poverty with natural resources. The Congo in Africa has the most natural resources. It's the poorest country. And then, as Carlos was saying, getting down to Hong Kong, no natural resources. Switzerland, no natural resources. Manhattan, no natural resources. It seems like wealth is inversely correlated. But so what about these countries like Norway? Does this break the trend? Maybe Norway succeeded because it's socialist, some people have said. Well, that's Norway. So I'll make two points. I'll make the point that I think oil actually has hurt Norway, just not to a great degree as it does to many third world countries. I think Norway would be richer without the oil. But I think the reason why it hasn't bankrupted Norway and turned it into a complete socialist country is that Norway generally never instituted price controls, at least from the 1980s onward. They had very conscious anti-price control policies and let prices float for goods, which Venezuela and most of the countries that are kind of oil despotisms don't. And what do you you have with oil is the government just kind of has all the revenue in the country and starts spending it. You have all the skilled labor goes to either work in the oil industry or it goes to things that are subsidized out of oil revenue, such as maybe you get a college degree that's being paid for out of oil revenue. You have a government bureaucrat job that's paid for out of oil revenue. But of course, when the oil price falls, this whole system breaks down and no one has a job anymore. The reason that Norway has been able to kind of hedge itself against this and not allow the state to just keep on expanding and expanding and crowd out all other industry with its of oil funds is because it has generally not allowed price fixing. And it has also done certain things like there's no slush fund that the oil revenue comes into that the government leader can spend to prop up the economy before the next election. What the oil revenue goes into is a securitized fund that's actually traded on the stock market, even though it's partially state-owned, called Statoil. And a lot of these suggestions for Norway came from the libertarian or neoliberal, if you want to call them that, economist Milton Friedman, Frederick Hayek. So Norway kind of has been able to some degree beat or at least mitigate the oil curse by being having a very pro-market policy and economy. And so on the surface, you could say, oh, Venezuela, Norway, and for that matter, the U.S. have roughly similar percentages of the economy that are state controlled. But it's the other things that matter. It's the price fixing. It's the way that the oil revenue is distributed, whether there's a long-term time horizon, whether you're looking at things long-term and putting it into a fund that is capitalized on a stock market, or whether you're just some government president getting a bunch of money, you want to spend it now because you want to win the next election. So that's what was happening in Venezuela. And to some degree in Norway, the Economic History Association put out an economic history of Norway, and their analysis is that oil wasn't struck in Norway till 1969. So it's a great kind of example of what oil does to a country. And Norway was able to run a countercyclical financial policy during the stagflation period. Let me translate that. They spent a lot of money in the 1970s. The government went crazy, started spending money. And the Norwegian firms started adapting to policy rather than markets. And now this is a direct quote. Norway lost significant competitive power and large-scale deindustrialization took place despite efforts to save the manufacturing industry. Another reason for deindustrialization was the huge growth in the profitable petroleum sector, persistently high oil prices from 1973 to 1985 pushed labor costs upward through spillover effects. This crowded out other industry. So this is what happened in Venezuela. 40 years ago, Venezuela had lots of sectors. They had agriculture, they had manufacturing, and then oil just kind of started growing and growing. The government devoted all of its resources to oil and towards incentivizing oil production. And this crowded out the rest of the economy. And then towards the very end, Venezuela has lost oil, as you were saying. Oil production actually has been cut to almost zero because Venezuela doesn't have enough resources to even produce oil. And furthermore, they can't even give it away. They can't even say to Exxon, hey, just come in and mine our oil. Just bring your capital equipment in here. Take our oil. We won't even charge you for it. They tried doing that, but no company trusts Venezuela because Venezuela has expropriated the oil companies. They think that if they put their capital to go and mine oil or drill oil in Venezuela, their capital is just going to get stolen. The machinery is going to get stolen. So Venezuela can't even give its oil away. It is, for all practical purposes, not even a natural resource because it can't really be exploited at the in the current socio-political environment.
I just wanted to kind of finish up on one thing here because we were talking about the issues with, mass migration out. And it turns out that actually recently in July, and I'm just taking a look at this, about 100,000 Venezuelans crossed into Colombia during a temporary weekend border opening in July. So folks, if you want to talk about a mass exodus of individuals, you're going to be seeing this in the coming years. There's no way it's kind of not going to happen, especially with the technology to be able to get out of those areas. I would probably suggest, though, that you're going to end up in a little bit of a better situation than you do with Syrian refugees, not only because of the religion, but I also don't think a lot of the neighboring South American countries are going to be offering, say, $40,000 for a family to move from Venezuela. I think they're just going to be, you know, like in many other situations, simply wanting to be able to eat food and work. And
yeah,
I hope the best for these individuals, because what needs to be understood is that when you call for socialism, when you call for central planning, when you call for the state, you're calling for blood and sterilization, labor camps. I mean, they are enslaving their people to work on farms. They're actually forcing them, right? I mean, that is chattel slavery. Plus, you have sterilization. This is everything that, like, Alex Jones says the U.S. government wants to happen right here before he decided to start supporting Donald Trump. You know, this is the FEMA camps, right? I mean, this is the mass sterilization. This is the mass starvation.
It's socialism.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, just pick a government that has actually destroyed private industry and look at it, and it looks like that. You know, whether it's the USSR or Mao's China, there are, you know, labor camps, there are mass starvations, and Venezuela hasn't actually gotten to the mass starvation point yet. We have some people who have probably starved to death, but they're not starving to death in the millions like they were in Chairman Mao's China, but it might only be a few months away. The entire food structure is very precarious in Venezuela. People are just able to get enough calories to survive, and small changes could mean we're looking at millions of people starving, like they did in other real hardcore communist countries. USSR, you had millions starve in the Holodomor in the 30s. 70 million people died in Mao's Great Leap Forward in the 1950s in China. Pol Pot killed about 7 million or 3 million people, I think, which is like one in every four people in Cambodia. But you know, this is how communism operates. It reorganizes society. And Ludwig von Mises, again, has a great quote where to try and organize society is kind of like chopping up a human and putting it back together and, you know, just saying, oh, there, I made it better. You know, no, it doesn't work that way. When you cut up society and put it together in a different way, when you move entire villages into different areas to try and do massive infrastructure projects at gunpoint, you know, first of all, you have to have complete control because people really don't want to do this. And so, you know, they will fight you with everything they have. And so you need to pretty much just make it clear that anyone who criticizes the government dies immediately of torture, which is what every communist government has done. And it's how you have to do it to operate communism. You can't get people to go out of the countryside into the labor camps unless you don't have any political freedom. And then furthermore, just communism and socialism require this massive planning. If you try to do something like the Venus Project or whatever people have where, oh, we're just going to get people into these new eco-friendly cities and, you know, they're just going to go out there. They won't do it. You can't do things like that. China tried building some cities to try to get people to move there. People didn't move. In Mao's days, they probably just would have marched a million people out there at gunpoint to live in the cities for photos, and half of them would have died of starvation. The Chinese government has gotten a little better since then, so they're luckily not doing that. But they built the cities, you know, just that degree of socialism fails. And, you know, when you build the cities and try to get people to move into them or move out of the cities, lots and lots of people die, and it is just the most awful, awful situation for human beings, and there's really no way around it. And I worry that Venezuela is about to go 100%, you know, go full retard. They're kind of clinging on. And the only good news out of this entire situation is that it kind of seems to be a little rare what's happening to Venezuela. Countries that have been communist in the past, typically it happened when there was some sort of very violent, often from abroad, revolution or violence overthrowing the government, and a bunch of thugs with guns came in and killed everybody. The gradual decay of a capitalist society to a communist society, really, I think people like capitalism and enjoy capitalism so much they don't let it happen very often. There's just too many forces keeping the market in place. Venezuela, it has happened. We're seeing that now. I'm trying to think of other countries that have gone from modern capitalist countries to third world hellholes that are socialist. Probably the only other one I can really think of, and again, this isn't like a pure, because it's involved a lot of foreign policy, would be like Rhodesia to Zimbabwe. You might be able to make that case. Although that, you know, has a lot of colonial implications that Venezuela didn't have. But usually, I mean, communism and socialism, they just fail so spectacularly that the good news is that usually, I think, even socialists are too smart to try socialism. Socialists run Europe and arguably the US, but I think, you know, you don't even see that many overt calls for price controls anymore, just because they've had it drilled into them in their micro 101 class that price controls lead to shortages. Like, I think capitalism is winning, and this is kind of a little bit of an exception, Venezuela, and it's absolutely horrible. And the only good that could ever come out of it is the learning experience factor, where the rest of the world is sitting in capitalist countries nowadays, and they're looking at this and going, oh yeah, we don't want that, do we? And hopefully it resonates to some degree, although, as we were talking about in the beginning of the show, people are thick and very ideological, and even the left's trying to justify how Venezuela is. It's not really the price controls that are the problem.
Absolutely, Andrew, and I want to thank you for being on the show today. I know it's a little bit shorter than normal, but I just wanted to kind of paint a picture for individuals on kind of what's going on there as just another demonstration as to why, in order for us to be free, the state must end. We need to get into a position where we're no longer begging for other individuals to take away our rights and to give away rights that we never had in the first place. Yeah. You don't have the right to steal people's production or to control other people's lives using violence. And this is just a perfect example of that. And, you know, it's an unfortunate situation. I'm hoping that they don't end up quite like the beginning of what happened with Chile, where you had to have someone like Pinochet come out and start throwing people out of helicopters. But it would be fantastic if they started. It's just unfortunate that what's most likely going to happen is that it's going to have to get a lot worse before it gets better. And it's terrible to make statements like that, because it's not something that I want. But it just might be the actual case, and that might end up being the case of the United States as a whole. I'm just hoping that the internet and communication is able to change that, maybe sway the ways of history, because though we love to bring up points of the past to demonstrate how either terrible or great things are going, we've never had the internet. We've never had this ability to communicate with one another, to produce foods in the vast majority of, and quantities that we're able to do right now. So this is a beautiful time in history to kind of see what's going to happen. I'm happier to be here right now than I'm surely would have been happy to be living in 1800s America, even though it would have been technically easier for me to start a business because of the great technology that we've had. And it would be fantastic if Venezuela doesn't have to deal with the mass starvation of Maoist China in order to be able to steer the other way. So, Andrew, I would like to say again, thank you for being on the show. Once again, people can find you basically at the Bastiat Institute and on liberty.me as well. Correct?
Yep. Check us out on Bastiat Institute and Liberty Me. And Liberty Me is a great article writing platform for anyone who hasn't heard of it. If you write articles or just want to read articles, check out liberty.me, and it's completely free. You just sign up, put an email address, and it's your own blog site that you can create your own blogs. And we have great search engine optimization. We get your blogs out to a lot of people. And so seeking all libertarians who want to write, come to liberty.me.
And forget the Ponzi scheme that is Steam. But that's a conversation for another time. All right, Andrew, thanks again for being on the show, man.
Talk to Thank you. Later. Bye.
All right, how was that, man?
That was good. Yeah.